Good morning, everyone. We will call the Legislative Coordinating Commission to order. Today is June 19th, 2019, and we do have a quorum present. We will begin on the agenda with the approval of the minutes from our March 26th, 2019 meeting. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Representative Carlson moves the approval of the minutes from March 26, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Next on the agenda, we will review and approve the resolution establishing the LCC Subcommittee on Minnesota Water Policy. And we have Representative Peter Fisher here to share some thoughts on that. Good morning. Welcome to the commission.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And good morning, commission. I appreciate the opportunity to briefly talk to you about the establishing subcommittee on water. This is a very important opportunity for us to continue working proactively on our water issues in the state of Minnesota. So often when we're working on water issues, they are complex. They work differently in different parts of the state because of different hydrology, geology, et cetera. And one of the things that we find out that many times that the issues that we have brought before us is something that we are not able to address in regular committee hearing time. 2 years ago, we spent a lot of time during the summer addressing infrastructure issues, wastewater standards, et cetera. And we had meetings all summer long where we came out with recommendations afterwards, where we were bringing people from across the state together and spending many hours to discuss the issue. Last year, we had 14 recommendations that came forward to the legislative process. Once again, using a very elaborate process during the year, during the summer, where we had people meeting throughout the summer in many hours of discussion to help formulate policy that not only protects our water but moves our state forward. Having the subcommittee on water would allow us to continue to do these things in a bipartisan, bicameral way so that we can continue to be proactive on water issues instead of being reactive. And I would stand for any questions that people might have.
Thank you, Representative Fisher, and Senator Weber has briefed myself and I think our Senate colleagues on this, and he is a strong advocate, and I've had discussions with Speaker Hortman, and my understanding is the funding for this is in the LCC budget already, and we would what the resolution in front of us would do is continue the water policy. It would be a subcommittee of the LCC, and it would sunset when the funding sunsets at the end of the biennium.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay. Members, are there any other questions or comments? Seeing none, we need a motion to approve the resolution to establish the LCC Subcommittee on Minnesota Water Policy. Speaker Hortman moves that. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Pappas is joining us on the phone. And Senator Pappas, just as a reminder, you can join us, but you cannot vote via the phone. But we appreciate you having you being with us this afternoon.
We appreciate your support.
Mr. Chair, we did hear it for the record, though.
Senator Gazelka. Next on the agenda is the review and to review the resolution establishing the LCC Subcommittee on Data Practices. And Mr. Hubinger is going to run through that with us very quickly. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. This resolution, LCC 2, would continue the work of the Data Practices Commission, which also sunsets on June 30th. The language in the resolution mimics the statutory language that governs the current commission and provides for the same membership. There is no appropriation for this group. The House and Senate have paid for their members' expenses on per diems. There was a one-time appropriation several years ago. There's still a $45,000 balance if they want to engage in some research work.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. And my understanding is Representative Lesch and Senator Limmer, who are the chairs of the committees that have oversighted this in the House and the Senate, are both on board and very supportive. And Senator Limmer did want me to mention, just for the record, that he would encourage the same membership that is currently there to continue under this subcommittee. Is there any discussion on this resolution? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve? Senator Gazelka moves the resolution establishing the LCC Subcommittee on Data Practices. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Next, we will turn it over to Mr. Hubinger for a few updates.
Mr. Chair and members, just a couple of updates on administrative matters. No action is being requested today. The first relates to biennial budgets. I'm happy to report that the budget requests for the commissions and joint agencies were fully funded. We're really happy about that. That appropriation includes funding for our requested operating increases, a key IT position in the Office of the Revisor, a fully staffed Legislative Budget Office, and one-time funds to support the work that the LCC does in supporting the redistricting effort next year. Want to thank all of you for your work in making sure that we're fully funded so that the joint offices can continue supporting the work of the legislature. The directors of the joint offices are currently working through their allotments to develop operating budgets that fit within those appropriations. Be happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions for Mr. Hubinger? Seeing none, please continue, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, the second item relates to the NCSL compensation study. The LCC, like the Senate and the House, has engaged NCSL to look at our compensation structure. Like the Senate and the House, NCSL is developing amendments or revisions to our salary ranges so that we're able to attract and retain qualified staff. We've been meeting with the directors to review some preliminary numbers and some preliminary data. We hope to finalize that work shortly. That feeds into the salary plan for the LCC. The Senate and the House have both adopted their salary resolutions and their rules committees. The LCC can now begin work on its plan. Our practice is to adopt a salary plan that's midway between what the Senate does and what the House does. We had a meeting of the directors earlier this week to start beginning some preliminary work on that and to determine how that salary plan would fit within our appropriations. Our usual practice is that after consulting with leadership staff for the LCC chair to provide approval of that salary plan and ranges, since it's between what the House and Senate do. Reminding you that that's been our practice for many years. We again hope to move promptly on that so that our folks can also receive increases, as are the House and Senate staff.
Thank you. Members, any discussion? Speaker Hortman.
Just a question about how are the other members of the LCC notified when the salary proposal comes to the chair and if there's action taken by the chair?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Speaker Hortman, we can certainly provide a copy of that proposal to all the members.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, members? Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just a couple of notes about interim activities. The LCC has been operating under a rather antiquated sexual harassment policy. The Senate and the House have updated their plans. We will be working to update ours and submit a proposed revision to the LCC later this calendar year. The LCC will also need to meet later this year to review the benefit book that establishes general terms and conditions for employees or benefits for the employees of the House and Senate and the LCC. That has to be adjusted to reflect changes, especially to the state employee group insurance program that applies to both staff and members. And then finally, there was language in the conference committee report for state gov finance that dealt with the legislature's compliance with accessibility standards. The compliance date was set in September of 2022, and a working group to help the legislature get to that, that would begin in 2021. We're going to be talking with House and Senate and LCC colleagues about doing that, some of that work on an informal basis beginning this summer.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Members, the next agenda item is testimony related to the Council for Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and this agenda item came about after some concerns were brought to my attention and I think other members of the LCC. And I just want to point out that the LCC today is not going to take any action on this. However, I did feel that it was important that we had some public testimony in an open and transparent manner as was requested of me and the committee. So we're going to give folks, we're going to do 20 minutes. We're going to give Chair Medea and his group about 10 minutes to discuss some things that happened at the last meeting, and then we're going to hear from the other side about 10 minutes, and then we're going to move on. Before we take that testimony, Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it possible to have someone give us some background on this issue, what our responsibilities are, if there's something that's being asked of us? I've been getting emails, as I'm sure all of you have, but I'm not sure I totally understand what our role in this is or what the actual problem is. Is there some sort of third party that can kind of give us some background on this before we jump into the just
Representative Dowd, I think that's a fantastic idea. Mr. Hubinger, would you mind just giving us a little bit of a background on what our responsibility is?
Mr. Chair, Greg Hubinger, the legislature reformed the three state ethnic councils about 5 years ago, Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, and the and the Latino Affairs Council, sorry. And the general premise was to, these are three executive branch councils, but as a way to improve the relationship and understanding that the councils make recommendations not, and advise not only the governor but also the legislature, they reformed the three councils to have 15 members, 11 citizens appointed by the governor, and four legislators, one from each of the four caucuses. Under that statute, the governor, as I said, appoints the 11 citizens. The four legislative members have the statutory authority to remove a member appointed by the governor. And after some deliberation, the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans voted to recommend to the four legislators of that council to remove one member at their meeting last Thursday.
And Mr. Hubinger, what, if any, role does the LCC play with the different councils?
Mr. Chair, the LCC appoints the directors of each of the councils. It's established a subcommittee to assume that responsibility. The only other role of the LCC is to review the biennial budget, which the LCC did at its meeting in March. There is no role in formal role for the LCC in the immediate matter before you.
Very good. Any other questions for Mr. Hubinger before we get into the testimony? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. And before we start the testimony, I just ask some of the emails that I've received, and I'm sure other members have been a little bit heated. So I just ask that we keep this respectful, and we will let's keep it to the point in hand. And with that, we'll turn it over to Mr. Medea. And again, we'll give each side 10 minutes, and then if members have any questions, we'll open it up for members of the commission. So, Mr. Medea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is David Maeda. I'm the board chair of the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans. I've been on the board since 2014 and had the pleasure to serve the past 2.5 years as board chair. I'm at a bit of a disadvantage to Representative Dowd's point here because I don't know what you know about the difficulties our council has been facing. And I'll preface my comments by saying for myself and for our board, the issues are not political, partisan, or personal. The issue that it's brought us to this point is solely about what I think is inappropriate behavior by an individual board member. State statute specifies two ways a community board member can be removed from the three state ethnic councils. The first is because we are appointed by the governor can essentially unappoint us. The second involves our council's statutory makeup. We have four legislative members on our board, one from each of your caucuses. If three of the members vote for removal, then that community board member is removed. I won't get into the details, but there's a long history here of what I consider inappropriate behavior by our Chinese board member, Zoe Z, who's here. But in April of 2018, I had the very difficult task of bringing serious allegations against Ms. Z to our full board, and we were asking our four legislative members to remove Ms. Z. Unfortunately, the vote of our legislative members was 2-2. I say this was unfortunate not because of the outcome, but because the vote was partisanly divided. Our two Republican members voted no, and our two DFL members voted yes. Again, I don't see this as a partisan issue. It's an issue of what should be the proper conduct and expectations of state board members. No one had disagreed Ms. C had acted inappropriately. Senator Chamberlain, who was on our board at that time, described her actions as a break in protocol. In my eyes, it was more serious, but I have great respect for Senator Chamberlain's point of view. Given the failed vote as the board chair, I was tasked with the challenge trying to move forward in a productive manner. I took this challenge seriously. As I opened my remarks at our meeting this past Thursday, I took Representative Hamilton's words to heart when he explained his April 2018 vote not to remove Ms. C. He said he spoke to other volunteers on other boards to what they would do in a similar situation. He was told they would put the violating board member on notice and that their conduct was serious, another violation would warrant removal. I'm a big supporter of second chances. I think we all need redemption. I certainly need redemption in my life. But at the following board meeting, I documented all this so that it's on the record. I would not be before you today if I didn't think Ms. C again crossed a line that we as board members cannot cross. I can't really get into the details. It involved a meeting that our staff had set up for the members of the Hmong Chamber of Commerce to meet with Senator Gazelka. And Ms. Z was told specifically twice by staff that she should not attend this meeting because it was a private meeting with the Hmong Chamber and Senator Gazelka. Ms. Z violated staff's, I won't even say recommendation, staff's directive, and she attended the meeting. This greatly upset members of our Hmong Chamber of Commerce, and then I brought this matter back before our board, and as was mentioned by Mr. Hubinger, our community members voted on recommending to our legislative members for removal, and it was a unanimous vote. So I just want to get that on the record. All of our community members support the motion to remove Ms. C. And I'll turn it over to...
Welcome. We know Senator Lane, but if before each of you speak, if you could just state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Good morning, Senator Miller and Commission members. My name is Gail Chang Bohr, and just to sort of give you some context, I'm a retired judge, but I'm not here in that capacity at all. I'm here because I am a Chinese person from Jamaica. And I've lived, my husband and I and our family have lived in this great state of Minnesota since 1980. Since that time and throughout that time, we have seen great changes in the community of Asian Pacific Minnesotans and especially among Chinese Americans. So it's a different community every time, right? In particular, I want to make sure that we understand that when we say Chinese, we're talking about Chinese from many different places. I'm from Jamaica. We have Chinese from Taiwan. We have Chinese from Hong Kong, Chinese from Malaysia, et cetera. I think you're quite aware of that. So there are 39,000 of us who identify as Chinese in the state of Minnesota. I want to make sure that you understand that there's no one group of Chinese people who speak for all Chinese people, and that we have to be clear about that. So we are diverse in our Chineseness, and I think, as my colleague will say, she will also speak to that point. But so I think I'll stop there and let Dr. Chu go on.
Good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Rose Chu. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commission members. I am someone who's been here since the snowstorm of 1991 in Minnesota. And then before that, I was in Atlanta getting my PhD. And I'm born in Hong Kong, raised in Malaysia. And interestingly, all these years, I've been always interested in issues of Pan-Asian because I have a lot of friends who are Chinese from all over. Some of them are born here. Some of them are descendants of some of the Minnesotans here. And so for me, I don't belong to like any one group because I feel like I'm not all Hong Kong and I'm not all Malaysian, but I have a lot of friends from various perspectives. And when we get together, sometimes we do talk about how somehow lately there has been a single story about what who Chinese is. And so this is just an opportunity to say this is a counter-narrative, that there are many different kinds of Chinese from different places and that no one can police us to say whether we are really true Chinese or not. Chinese is really a group. In the whole world, we have a saying in Chinese to say we are loose as sand, partly because we are all over, from in Africa, in Aruba, in you know Jamaica, for example, and all over. And that we all bring very different perspective, yet there is something about us that is the Chinese culture. And so it's not geographical. So like I'm not loyal to the mainland China, even though mainland China is like my root country. Right, it's my root in terms of culture, but not in terms of anything else. And so I've been here, like I say, almost 40 years. I was former assistant commissioner of education under Brandon Casillas, and I've been a long-time educator and really support the idea that if we have more, we can have more nuanced conversation and policy making for our state if we have better data. And that would also mean desegregating in a way that works for our community to understand ourselves better and to make better policies. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Lane.
As you know, I'm Senator Carolyn Lane, and I have given a handout out that my larger comments, but I'm going to try to condense them. And so in 2015, I revamped the statutes on the three ethnic councils. After an OLA report and some concerns about just simply dissolving the councils, I was key on making sure that this collaborative work of citizen councils could work. So I wanted to keep them and make them strong and mission-driven. And this was bipartisan work. And I'm skipping down now to the duties of the council members. There are two key duties, and I will read them. Collaborate with the council and the executive director in carrying out the council's duties. Participate in activities the council or executive director deem appropriate and necessary to facilitate the goals and duties of the council. Note that the focus is on the council's duties, not on one member's personal opinion or desire, and on working together as a team. What if a council member could not do this? I added the very high bar of the removal of by three of the four legislative bipartisan legislative members. And I'm not going to discuss any of the ongoing infractions of this board member, but I do want to mention one of the attempts that to assist the training for understanding of this board member. Representative Joanne Ward, which many of you know as key in collaboration and welcome and founder of the Civility Caucus, she and I met in my office for 2 hours with Zoe Z to clarify the mission of the council, the duties of the board member, and the difference between personal opinions as compared to the representing the council and its policy provisions for the entire Asian Pacific community. We found it completely frustrating that she, as she countered everything we said. It was a frustrating meeting. Is this political? Although the policy that Zoe dislikes is data disaggregation, the actual problem is not this particular policy. And there is not one whole ethnicity coalesced around this issue. It is a small group within one ethnicity. The problem is not political. The problem is the poor judgment of one citizen board member. And poor judgment seems to be not trainable. The result of this ongoing actions is that the credibility, trust, and respect for CAPM has been compromised. It was suggested by Representative Hamilton and others that if the citizen board members would vote for removal, that he would then make it happen. I thought this was an impossible task. The board members are rather averse to doing anything that they would feel would be shaming another member. But we went ahead and had the discussion with the body as a whole. Every member participated fully in the discussion, and they all voted for the removal of Zoe. The council has acted for and voted for the removal for cause. I was taught by the best leader I ever worked with that a leader needs to discern whether a member of the team is educatable or not. If trainable, then help them be the best they can be. If not, then move them out from a position for which they are not suited. It's not personal. It's not political. It's the only way a team can function. And I want these councils to work. That is the purpose of reforming them in 2015. I trust they can, and my trust has been verified by the council members' difficult work last Thursday. But we aren't done. Their work needs to be honored. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And we were closer to 11 minutes, so I'm going to, just in fairness, we'll give the other side the same amount of time. So I'm not sure exactly who is here to testify. I'm not sure if Zoe wants to please come forward. And please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Zoe Z. Honorable LCC members, thank you for allowing the people to speak here. I'm the Chinese Community Board member appointed by Governor Dayton 2 years ago. I'm a CPA, a small business owner, and a former city council member of Lakeland Shores in Minnesota. My husband is a physician. Together, we raised triplets. Although our life has been very busy, but it has been our family tradition and our passion to serve our communities. I was thrilled to represent our hardworking Chinese community in Minnesota. Shortly after I came on board, the community brought the controversial ethnic data collection law into my attention. After 60 years of Chinese Exclusion Act, our community is super sensitive to collecting ethnic data on our children and potentially being discriminated against. As a community representative on the council, I repeatedly contact Executive Director Ms. Sia He to voice our community concerns. My words did not get heard. Then our community members arranged a meeting with Ms. He to voice their concerns directly. Again, their voices were carefully kept from the board members. Our community members originally scheduled a presentation on data desegregation on the board before even I came on the board. But the schedule was postponed again and again until well after the bill was passed into the law. Finally, the Chinese, as well as members from other communities, such as Indian community, the Korean community, held a 300-people rally in front of the state capitol on the API Day last year to protest against the ethnic data collection law on minorities. Senator Lane and Representative Joanne Ward did talk to me before the rally. They told me that communities who do not agree with the council position should not show up on the API Day. And I said, it was out of my control. 300 people, you know, so many people want to come. It's not under my control. And I can't do anything. Actually, on that rally, on the API Day, I did not go to the rally at all. It was my saddest days in my life because my father-in-law passed away in the early morning of API Day. While I was heartbroken and driving all over town looking for a funeral home and a burial site, the executive director was grinding her teeth and determined to remove me, retaliate against me, because I was perceived to be the representative of all these 300 people in front of the state capitol that protesting against her agenda. She and Mr. Chair immediately called for removal of my board membership based on frivolous allegations. Among them, I was accused of speaking against data desegregation during a small informal gathering of a coffee shop at the coffee shop where I was known as the Chinese board member. Without consulting or informing the board, Ms. He and Mr. Maida requested the governor's office to remove me. The governor's office refused to get involved in this matter. Then they went around to lobby the four legislative board members to remove me. propelled by the executive director. The chair, the vice chair, and four legislative members discussed an important board matter behind the scenes. Altogether, six board members, which could form a quorum. Although they were not able to secure enough votes to remove it at the end, the conduct is an obvious violation of the open meeting law. I would formally request the LCC and the Legislative Auditor's Office to investigate this incident as the role of the executive director played. The LCC is the appointing authority of executive directors for ethnic councils. This year, there were bills in Senate and House to modify the ethnic data collection law. The Senate hearing had heated testimonies from both sides in a room packed full of people. Immediately after that hearing, the executive director decided to remove me again. This time, she was finding fault with me for sitting in a community meeting with Senator Gazalka on an API day. Both the executive director and the chair were present during the meeting, and neither of them signaled me to leave. I would have no problem leaving the room any time, but they didn't say anything. 3 months later, to my surprise, Ms. Herr said I broke the rule to sit in the meeting, and for that, they would remove me again from the board. During the council board meeting last week, Ms. Herr and chair announced that they decided to remove me back in April, which was right after the Senate hearing on data desegregation. They canceled the May board meeting to work on the community board members to secure enough votes to support a recommendation to remove me. Again, all this work was kept from the public eyes, and I was completely kept in the dark until the board meeting last week. A quorum of community board members showed up and supported a recommendation to remove me. Instead of hearing out the community voices, the executive director chose to silence the dissident community voices by removing its board member. I would again request the LCC and the Legislative Auditor's Office to investigate the potential violation of open meeting law by the board and Ms. Herr's role in this incident. My community members and I separate occasions, voiced our concerns several times to the LCC director, Mr. Greg Hubinger, since last year. There were many improprieties in the CAPM and management. With a $1 million budget, it's an official state government agency, yet it did not have strategic plan for years. Under the order of 2013 Legislative Auditor's Report, each ethnic council was to come up with a strategic plan. The CAPM spent almost 4 years and more than $20,000 on consultants and did not have a strategic plan. Ms. Herr finally drafted a one-page strategic plan for board approval last year. Ms. Herr jokingly said that she drafted a one-page plan during the Vikings game against the Saints last year, and thanks to the Vikings. What a waste of time and taxpayers' money. Other ethnic councils have operations manual of policy and procedures the board member can follow. But at CAPM, executive director makes up her rules as she goes, including those rules that she has cited that I have broken. Last year, I strongly advocate for a council policy manual and form a board task force to work on it. However, the executive director got into arguments when board members were discussing policies. She called off the task force meetings altogether because she disagreed on some policies recommended by board members. The executive director also called off board government relations committee because she did not agree with board members on some issues. Ms. Herr's her way or highway style leadership is seriously impeding the council's mission to engage diverse API communities or to build trust in the council. Ms. Herr's agenda and conduct is polarizing our API communities and is doing disservice to the council. There are 40 API communities in Minnesota, and we deserve a new leadership that unites the diverse API communities and not a leader that divides us, turns ourselves against each other, and even discriminates against some of us. We would like the LCC to consider our concerns when you make the next appointment for the council leadership. Again, it's been an honor to serve our community, but to my utmost regret, and perhaps to the disappointment to my community, I really feel sorry that I am about to say this, that I will submit a letter of resignation from CAPM board in protest against the council leadership's misrepresentation of our API communities and mismanagement of the council. I will continue to serve my community and fight for our children's rights to be full Americans, not Chinese Americans, not Indian Americans, not Muslim Americans, not Cuban Americans, not Kenyan Americans. By the way, if President Obama's children were going to public school in Minnesota, they would be labeled as Kenyan, because their grandfather was from Kenya, according to the data desegregation law here in Minnesota. We would like to ensure the next Chinese board member is endorsed by our community and truly represents our community. If the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans continue to operate without our American democracy, it fails its meaning of existence. Neither the community nor the legislature would trust the council anymore in the future. I thank the other fellow Chinese Americans talking about their roots. I understand this. They're aware of diverse community. But when the government asks their children to put down where their ethnicity, then they will say they're Jamaican, or they'll say they're from Hong Kong. They're no longer Chinese. Only leave the Chinese to be in the detriment of this law. And that's why we're fighting it. Although I have been biting the council's rules, whatever they make up as rules, but this is such an unfair situation. That's why I want to take this opportunity to inform all of you, our respectful legislators, that the government is supposed to represent us all. Thank you very much again for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions? Thank you all for being here and for your testimony this afternoon, this morning. That completes our testimony on that agenda item. Members, is there any other business for discussion? Seeing none, do we have a motion to adjourn? Senator, we just adjourned. Okay. The commission is adjourned.